Hey, everybody, it's Ryan Ripley. Wanted to get a new offering in front of you as soon as possible, evidence-based leadership. And so as you all know, Todd Miller, myself, and Will Seeley, we're big on evidence-based management. We want to apply it to the leadership space. We all know that modern managers face complex challenges every day. You're juggling a lot of needs, your direct reports, your stakeholders, your customers, they all need constant attention. What we want to do is help you manage that. We want you to use information and data to make good decisions around all of these areas so that we're delivering the right thing at the right time for the right customer. And we know that we're doing that because we're using data and evidence to validate all the things that we're doing. And not only that, we're not just looking at value, but we're looking at our capabilities as an organization. Can we deliver on time? Can we innovate effectively? Do we have too much tech debt? Do we have too many things in process? Are we unable to deliver when the market demands that we do? We look at all of these things with evidence-based management. We merge that into a leadership mindset and lens, and we enable you to make new and better decisions repeatedly based off of the data that you're collecting within your organization. It's exciting stuff. We hope you can join us. Visit agileforhumans.com/EBL course. Join us in one of these offerings. We think you're going to love it. Hope you can join us. Use Agile for Humans, the number 4, to take another 15% off of this course. And we can't wait to see you there. All right, welcome to another episode of Becoming a Scrum Master. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me today, longtime friend, probably one of the OGs on Agile for Humans. We used to see each other at conferences when people got together in the same place and congregated.
Yeah.
Jenny, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great.
Good to see you.
Looking forward to next year.
What's that?
Wrapping up the year with a great conversation with you, and then looking forward to next year, what that might bring.
Next year will be good, I think, but we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Let's start it off with some good advice. So let's jump right into it. Was there a specific project or situation where you... Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. I'm in the wrong order.
Oops.
Let's start at the beginning. Sharing a story of how you first encountered Scrum. And what motivated you to become a Scrum Master? Any moments or experiences that sparked your interest? All that stuff would be great to hear about.
Great. Sure. Yeah. I was at a large telecommunication company and had been brought in to help establish some order in a development group because they were pretty cowboy, pretty chaos. And I did the absolutely wrong thing by coming in and creating this whole stage gate process and just about got fired. And so, you know, I went to the library virtually and found this book on Scrum and Agile. And I started digging into it and I'm like, wait, this is how stuff should work. This makes sense. This is when things have worked well. This is kind of some of that. So anyway, we got some coaching and some training. We took 7 teams from chaos to order and had very lightweight boundaries around what they should do. And we had some great coaching, great training. And it was pretty good implementation there. Within 3 sprints, we were exceeding all of our stakeholders' expectations, delivering faster than they could refill the backlog with powerful stuff. And it everything went great.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It's usually like the disaster project that sparks. It's almost like necessity breeds ingenuity, or I'm butchering the quote, right?
Yeah, no, but I mean, the organization was it was not going to be around much longer if we couldn't figure out how to make things work. And so we delivered the thing we needed to deliver on time, which got us the credibility to keep going. And it was good. And I'm painting a pretty rosy picture. There were some times later on that things got a little rocky as we got a little bit smarter than we really were. We thought we were smarter than we really were. But
well, and I think that happens. That learning over time is probably one of the more frustrating things, but I'm sure along the way there was a eureka moment,
yeah,
or some kind of light bulb moment that made you realize, you know, perhaps Scrum has potential. Could you describe that a little bit?
Sure. Then I guess I will dig in a little bit to when things didn't go so well. So things went great. And I think part of the reason that things went so well in the beginning is because we all did it together. I mean, I made the initial recommendation based off of some of the research I did, but we were all in it together, all the leaders, managers, folks on the teams. We were learning, discovering, you know, trying things. There was a lot of safety. And then you know, we're like, well, how do we get better? And some people read a lot, thought that they knew more than other people, started insisting we did things certain ways instead of really being as collaborative. And the pivotal moment for me was actually in a coaching agile teams class with Lisa Atkins and Michael Spade. And I realized I really didn't know how to listen. So I thought that being the expert was the right thing to do. That's the way that I'd grown up in a large corporation. The more expertise you had, the more power you had, theoretically. But then I really examined what was happening and I didn't have the expertise. I'd read books, right? The people that had the expertise on how that organization could and should work were the people in the organization.
Love it.
So, Scrum Masters, don't tell people what to do, right? It's a collaborative team effort, having some good knowledge and leveraging the experiments of others is phenomenal, but context is most important.
Yeah. Yeah. The hero Scrum Master, yeah. You know, we run into that, or the performing Scrum. And what I mean is, you know, the spotlight on them and they think they're on stage, and I have fallen into that trap countless times where it's got to be about me. And I love how you point out very quickly that it's not about us. It's about the team. And now we can have opinions and we can voice them, but it's got to be in the context of collaborative discovery, right?
Right, right.
Love that. How would you say your perception and the execution of the Scrum Master role, or fulfilling the accountabilities, whichever way you like to say it, how do you think that's evolved, or has it? And are there aspects of this role that you view differently now compared to when you first started? And you've kind of hinted at some of it, but maybe there's a little more to that.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that context is so important here. And so again, here's what a great Scrum Master should be like, right? And that ideal, or what a great Scrum team or an agile organization or whatever the target is you're working on. But there is no right one. I mean, there are companies that are looking for predictability. There's companies that are looking for innovation, right? There's companies that are looking for higher quality, and all of those different business outcomes really require different levels. What's the word?
Levers.
Thank you. Levers. And they require different mindsets. I mean, there's different products work in different ways. And so one of the things that I struggle with, you know, as an agile coach or a Scrum Master, are folks coming in and saying, fully have to enable this team. They have to have, you know, 100% autonomy and all this. And that doesn't always work in all the organizations. Sometimes there are organizations that have strong boundaries, that have strong rule sets that you have to work within. And that can still be a phenomenal Scrum team, right? They just have different ground rules.
You know, before he passed, Amitai and I got to do a very long interview with Jerry Weinberg. And you just reminded me of something that he said that I think you're indirectly saying and might agree with. Let me see if I have made a good connection here. He warned us a number of times on that podcast, make sure you understand the problem that you're being asked to solve, right? Make sure that, you know, with your comments about context, it made me think, we got to be real certain that we're solving the problem we've been asked to solve. And I don't know, for some reason that just really flared up in my mind as you went through that.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. That first group that I was with at the telecommunication company, right? We were trying to be innovative. That was what was important. We had to beat the rest of the folks with mobile applications and such. My second organization that I worked with, I just kept sitting there thinking about how they were doing everything wrong. They just didn't get it. They just didn't get agile. And finally, like 5 months in, we had this conversation and I realized that 25% of their workforce was going to be retiring. So when they were talking about really understanding roles and responsibilities and being specific about that, it wasn't because it was a command and control hierarchical structure. It's they had an issue with knowledge walking out the door. Right. And so the problem that they were trying to solve for was not what I had been working on for 5 months. So absolutely. Yeah. I was getting ready to say too, I don't think I've ever found a time that I would disagree with Jerry. So I was saying that. And I love the quote he has. It's no matter what they say, it's a people problem.
Oh yeah. You know,
yeah.
Anything you can get of Jerry's, read it multiple times, listen to it. definitely enjoyed getting to talk with him. Speaking of kind of that advice kind of aspect, what advice would you give to someone aspiring to become a Scrum Master? Is there a particular mindset, skill, or habit that you believe is crucial for success in this role?
Yeah, well, I already talked about the listening aspect, so that would still be number one for me. I think the habit, though, that I would focus on is learning. One of the things that I really enjoy and continues to motivate me in this area of work is there's always more to learn. There's just always more to learn. Sometimes it's a deeper focus in a certain area or going, you know, broader. You never get to a point where you say like, I'm fully qualified. There's not another book or a class or someone I can pair with and learn. The learning's continual. And for me, that's exciting. That's part of the role.
You and I have both been around long enough now to where, and maybe you've seen this or have felt this idea too, where I've had to like relearn things where something that I thought was true 10 years ago, and I thought I had a real good grasp of, it's like I get to now and either my older brain has forgotten it or has misconstrued it. But I look at it again and I'm like, I don't understand this anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, I love this expression too. You never stand in the same river twice.
Right.
And we were joking before we started about like our piles of books and a class that you and I took together a few years ago. Like I'll thumb through my own notes and I'll be like, I remember that aha moment and I'm having it again, you know, because I'm either seeing different applications for it. I've just completely forgotten it or what. But yeah,
I have a habit of something that I do here. Like I will mark up a book like crazy. I'll highlight stuff. I take very detailed notes in the margins. If something really sticks out, like a phrase, I'll make sure to put a star on it and circle it. And that way, when I go back, I can actually remember what I might've been thinking or to see if it's changed. And what, you know, amazes me so much. And I know, I think you're the same way here, that it does change. It's like, well, wait, why did I think that was so neat? Cause that's not, and it just, yeah. It's crazy how that works, especially over careers that have spanned a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I used to have this idea, which I don't know how to really implement it, but you know, I don't know if everybody had like Spencer's gift shops, but they had the posters in the back and you could just kind of flip through and see all the posters at once.
Yeah.
In my head, there's like this like flipping of different models and lessons and stuff that just to be able to access that and be like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. And such. So I like your highlighted books. If there's a way to just make those into like a flippable poster kind of carousel of thought provoking ideas. Yeah.
Maybe AI can help us there someday.
Yeah.
So speaking of books, the last question I've got for you before we wrap this up, what is the one book every Scrum Master should read? It does not have to be an Agile or Scrum book, can be any book you like. But what do you think that is? Or what is that for you?
Well, I'm gonna say two if I can. As for a Scrum Master, I would say this is one of the best books, and you can see like I get this to people and stuff. One of the things I like about Susie's book is that it's just very dense. Somebody said, well, this is pretty small book for the price, and I said that's not the key. It's the fact
really good.
That it's got a lot of really good ideas in here. A taste of a lot of the ideas, right? Yep. That a Scrum Master should know. So I really like that. And then for Scrum Masters, I'd say Five Dysfunctions of a Team is the name of the book. I always say it's Five Behaviors of a Cohesive Team is the kind of the positive turn on that. But that book was another fundamental moment for me. Again, there was a little bit about listening in there that I hadn't really understood as much. People need to be heard, right? That's a lot of the dysfunction. That was a fundamental book early on for me. Recommend it to everybody. There's awesome. So much depth in that. Mm-hmm.
Great tips. Well, Jenny, I appreciate you doing this. How can people connect with you? Is there anything you'd like to promote or get in front of others before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I'd say for now, LinkedIn. So it's JennyTarwater. So Jenny Tarwater on LinkedIn is the best way. Feel free to direct message me. And I love meeting with folks one-on-one for a quick conversation about just about anything Agile related. So that would be best.
All right. We will get that in the show notes. You can click that link and go visit with Jenny. She's awesome. be sure to sync up with her in 2024. She can really help you out. And thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. Nice to see you.
You too. All right, everybody, be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and you get to see great conversations with great people like Jenny. Be sure to click that bell so you make sure that happens. Check out the socials, Twitter and LinkedIn are where we're typically at, stirring up trouble and posting things that drive people nuts. Some videos are going to pop up here. It's our free Scrum course and our free EBM course. No excuses, everybody. In 2024, watch those courses, go get your certification, start implementing what the videos say, get some good outcomes and impacts, and take over the world. For Jenny, I'm Ryan. Go forward, do some great Scrum things. Mark up your books, revisit them, see what you were thinking in the past, see if it's changed in the future, or I guess it'd be your present. And we'll see you next time. Hey, it's Ryan. If you're enjoying this show and want to take a deeper dive into Scrum with me and Todd, check out agileforhumans.com/training. Be sure to also look at the show notes to subscribe to our newsletter, get a copy of our book, Fixing Your Scrum, and learn more about working with us at Agile for Humans. Thanks for listening, and Scrum on!